Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. America is turning 250 years old, and what a long, strange, fulfilling, amazing, historic journey it's been. What have we learned since the founding? Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
Dr. Colleen Shogan, I wonder what kind of arc we see as we zoom out and look back 250 years. We recently had the historian and filmmaker Ken Burns on with us, and Ken talked about what he sees as similarities between the Revolutionary War period and today.
Absolutely. I mean, there's relevant, you know, there's comparisons all around. You see the incredible amount of division and frustration and ideological debate going on in the country. And you can't help but make those comparisons from that time, that very difficult time of the 1850s in the United States to what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, whether it was differences between the colonies in the Revolutionary time or the North and the South during the Civil War or the Vietnam era or whatever, I think one thing that we have found is that this nation has been pretty resilient. Mm-hmm. It may be stretched and near the snapping point, but it always seems to come back together. For our listeners who don't know, what is the archivist of the United States? Are you basically our country's historian, chief historian?
Well, the archivist of the United States is it runs the National Archives and Records Administration, which is an agency of the federal government that is responsible for all of our nation's records, both our records of our federal records of all the different agencies and departments that operate in the United States government, and then, of course, also our presidential records. So the job of the Archivist of the United States is to lead the agency. There's over 2,000 people who work at the National Archives and Records Administration across the country, which preserves, protects, and shares those nation's records with everyone, which, of course, represents our shared history.
How important is it, do you think, to preserve firsthand accounts of our nation's history?
I mean, it's absolutely invaluable because I think, you know, sometimes we think, oh, well, history's static. There's nothing new to be learned. And that's not true at all. You have to realize we have 13.5 billion paper records in the National Archives, 13.5 billion. So no one has looked through all 13.5 billion records. So there are discoveries and insights that are being made all the time with these records so that we can look at our nation's history, perhaps sometimes in small different ways, rediscovering new stories. But other times there can be major discoveries that really change how we think about a historical event.
Did Washington reflect on his own times? Did Lincoln write essays about time, you know, that he was in Washington and his life?
It's a great question. I don't think, I mean, Washington, you know, not as much of a writer. We know Washington was a voracious reader as he became older. He read more and more, collected more books as he was able to. Now, Lincoln did write. Lincoln kept what we might consider to be almost a journal, what other historians have called meditations. And when he would have an insight about something, he would write it down, and sometimes just on scraps of paper. And those meditations became snippets for his very famous speeches. You see some of those observations show up in the Gettysburg Address. You see other observations that he wrote down come up in his second inaugural address. I see a lot of great evidence that there's a very active, you know, examples of democracy at the local level. We see, for example, the regeneration and resurgence of civics education, and that's coming from, I think, a groundswelling from localities and states very interested in that, the strength of communities that are solving problems actually in the face of natural disasters. You just had an earthquake here today, but we see examples of communities figuring out how they can solve those problems on their own without intervention at higher levels. Local libraries are stronger than ever in many instances. So I think there's a lot to be said at the local level. However, what we've relied upon in the United States for many, many years is that energy from the local level to then influence and feed our national institutions. And I don't see that happening these days. There's a broken connection between much of the trust that we see at the local level, it's not percolating up into our national institutions. And we know from recent surveys and polling that the faith and trust in our national institutions is at an all-time low. So there is a big concern that we have to think about. One of the ways we can solve this, I think, is through a reinvigoration and a refocus on civics and history education.
Are we on the downslope of democracy in our nation?
I don't think there's any evidence necessarily that we're on the downslope at this point in time. One thing, as you said before, when you take a bird's eye view of any, you know, history, it can be American history or another country's history or world history, and we take a bird's eye view, you see that there are oftentimes patterns there are moments in time in which there are challenges. There are certainly times in the United States where we do not do the right thing. I mean, it's not just a positive story. It's not like, everything that we do is on has been on an upward linear trajectory. So there are often many instances of two steps forward and one step backwards. However, we have in the United States, we have eventually solved many of the problems that have been before us or made steps forward. So just because we are in this moment in time in which we are seeing our institutions strained and, like I said, public trust at lows, does not mean that we won't figure a way to come out of it, because evidence would show that in the past we have.
A part of American history that's worth remembering is the bravery of the patriots who brought down a plane on 9/11. Here's Chad Hartman.
Tom Burnett called his wife, Deanna, four times from Flight 93. Senior vice president of a medical device company, 38 years old. Somewhere over Pennsylvania in the morning of September 11th, he understood exactly what was happening and decided what he was going to do about it. By the third call, he already confirmed that two other planes had deliberately crashed in buildings. Told his wife clearly, "I know we're going to die," that he said something else. "Some of us going to do something about it." He asked her to call the authorities and tell them everything he had shared with her. He was gathering information between calls, quietly taking stock of what was on the plane, what the hijackers were doing, what windows of opportunities might exist. He was, by every account of those who had those calls, calm, focused, organized. The kind of person who, in the worst moment imaginable, did not waste a single second. His fourth call was brief. "We're going to rush the hijackers. I love you. I love the girls. I'll call you back." He never called back. Flight 93 crashed near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. I'm just reading a pause for a second. We know this, but it is just another reminder. Crashed at 10:03 in the morning. The Capitol building, believed by investigators to have been the intended target, was spared. Tom Burnett's words have been quoted in congressional testimony, read at memorials, and included in national remembrances of that day. And yet for many Americans who visit Flight 93 Memorial in Pennsylvania, his name is still new to them. That is worth sitting with for a moment. He made four calls in the last hour of his life. He spent the time gathering information, organizing a response, saying goodbye to his family, and then doing what he said he was going to do. He did not panic. He did not spend those calls in despair. He spent the time working the problem, loving his family, and deciding if this was how it was going to end. It was not going to end without a fight. The plane went down in a field instead of a building full of people. His daughters are grown now. Deanna Burnett has spent years speaking publicly about her husband, about those four phone calls, about it, what it means to have been on the other end of the line while history was happening. And there was nothing she could do but listen and write down what he told her. Tom Burnett called four times. He said he loved them. He said they were going to do something about it. Then he did. And then it shows Tom, younger, with two of his daughters. We're going to have 4th of July. And we are going to celebrate this country. And it's also part of a celebration of 250 years of our existence. You can be born in this country. You can come to this country. You can be flawed. You can be going through struggles. Every life matters. But who knows how many representatives, how many senators, the implications of that. And to make that decision, to show that courage, to be as organized, to be as fearless, to be as calm, to have that sense of we have to do it.
Got chills reading it last night after you had posted it. I got chills running up my spine as you just read it now. To know what is happening around the country as he spoke to his wife.
Yeah.
And to understand this is very likely it, that this is the end for me. And to not just curl up into a ball and cry,
yeah,
but to find other like-minded individuals who are willing to stand up,
yep,
get up out of their seats, and do whatever they can. If they can't save themselves, hopefully they can save others. I mean, it brings to mind...
It almost brings tears to your eyes.
It does.
Think about it.
Absolutely does.
I don't care how many times you've heard it.
And it's just, it brings to others to mind, you know, firefighters who went up into the towers on 9/11. Think about D-Day. Kids, you know, late teens, early 20s, how many of them approaching the beach...